Welcome to episode 9 of Offbeat Tracks.
Already at 9.
Hello,
my
name is Max.
I'm Danielle.
I wanted to draw that out so I didn't rhyme again. My name rhymes with the name of the podcast. I can't help, like, it's going to happen every time.
I think that you should rhyme because everyone likes it. They told me.
Everyone?
Everyone.
You surveyed everyone?
Everyone. Okay. Everyone is very scientific, Max. Rhyme.
Well, today, all bets are on We're Doing the Jets.
Ah, thank you.
I am very, very, very stoked about this episode because I love the Jets. I love the Jets. They were one of the first groups that got me into 80s music.
Really?
When I kind of first started realizing that I liked 80s music because they would play old videos on VH1 when I was like, you know, a middle school slash early high school child in the late 90s and the early 2000s. Mm-hmm. And I started getting these like little compilation CDs when you'd find them in the dollar bin of like 80s hits. And one of the first ones I ever bought, like I remember this because it was on page one of my little CD booklet. Remember how I used to walk around with a CD booklet?
Uh-huh. And,
had Crush on You on it. And it totally drew me into this, like, because they, like, the Jets are so 80s pop. It is the most 80s that 80s pop could possibly be.
Yeah.
And Crush on You is so 80s, and I was just so into it. I'd never heard a song like that, and I was like, oh my god, this is incredible. So,
really?
All about it, yes.
Yeah, I remember the Jets from when I was a little kid. I remember the first time I ever saw the Jets.
Oh, yeah?
Which was, I had to look this up, I think it was a 1990 or 1991 episode of Square One. Do you remember Square One?
No. What is Square One?
It's like, we're only a year apart, but I seem to remember there's like this 90-91 gap where I happen to remember things that you were like, what the hell?
No, I don't know.
It was a PBS show.
Okay.
Back in the late 80s, early 90s that I loved, and it was all about math. So it was like all about math stuff, and they had like kitschy little sketch things about math, and it was totally cool, and I loved that show, but it was like pretty cool, and you'd have musicians and like athletes on it sometimes. They had the Jets on it, and they sang a song called Infinity.
Wow.
About the thing. You can find it on YouTube, because I remember when I was thinking about this episode.
Yeah, we'll so put that on the show page for this episode, because that's amazing.
Yeah, so I remember the Jets, and I didn't really know who they were, and I didn't really hear them again until I really got into 80s stuff. And then I was like, the Jets, is that like the thing on the show I saw when I was a kid? I never forgot it, because I thought they were kind of cool. But yeah, that's how I came to know the Jets.
The Jets. I
love a soft yay.
The Jets, for some background, are from Tonga. They're from the island of Tonga. And they moved to Minneapolis, where all great music from the 80s came from.
Not all, but a lot.
Yeah, a lot of it, yeah. That's right. Sweden did exist, too. Mm-hmm. How could we forget?
Yeah, don't you knock Sweden.
So these two parents who had were already forming a very large family moved their family from Tonga to Minneapolis. I found an interview from just a few years ago with Mona, one of the two girls who was the two lead singers. Elizabeth and Mona were the two lead singers. Her nickname in the band was Grizz. I love that. Because her sister was Elizabeth, so they called him Liz and Grizz.
Oh, wow.
Isn't that cute?
It's like 30 Rock.
Yeah. right, exactly. So they were living in Minneapolis, and I just love this. Their dad basically sat them down. They have this huge family. The Jets are the oldest 8 members of a family that has 17 children.
2 of which are adopted.
Right.
They didn't just stop at 15.
Because the dad was a Mormon and the mom was a Catholic. So both, like, you know, cultures surrounding big, big families.
Yep.
So the dad sits down the kids. And this is when the oldest one, Leroy, was, I think, upper teenagers, we'll say, upper teen years. And said, we need a family business. We need a job. We need you guys to do something. So here's your choices.
We have too damn many people in this family. Make some money.
Well, you know, it's very family-oriented
culture,
being Mormon, being Catholic, et cetera. You know, my family's Catholic. Like, family business is a big thing. Like, I get it.
Yeah.
And he basically said, we want to start a family business. So here are your options. We can either start a lawn care service or we can start a band. This is what Mona told this interview.
Who was the wet mop in the family who voted lawn care?
I would guess it was the younger ones who didn't end up being in the band. So yeah, of course the kids were like, yeah, we want to be in a band.
Did they know that they had musical talent?
Well, that's the thing. So the next day, Mana says this, so the next day, literally the next day, the dad goes out and buys musical instruments for the whole family and is basically like, you're going to play guitar, you're going to play keyboard, and gives them all instruments.
This is so Jackson's an American
dream. And then they have these instruments and they're like, shit, we don't know how to play anything. So the oldest one, Leroy, she said they could only afford a couple weeks of guitar lessons for him. So Leroy plays guitar for like 2 weeks, goes to guitar lessons for like 2 weeks, and realizes, well, I can just do this by ear. So he just starts listening to the radio, listening to records, and like learns how to play guitar by ear. And the rest of them all follow suit and do this, including Elizabeth and Mana, who had singing ability. You know, I think singing is like that one musical thing where you have to have a bass skill set.
You have to be able to hear a note right, and know you can when grow you're on
and they off. And Liz and Mana both definitely had that ability because they're very good singers. And so it all sort of fell into place. So here we have the oldest 8 siblings of this group, ranging in age from, I think Leroy, the oldest, was like 17 or 18 when the band started. But just for perspective, so when this band started in 1985, they started before 1985, but when they landed their record contract in 85, the two girls who were singing lead were 11 and 12 years old. And I really think that's important perspective, mm-hmm. considering like the subject matter of the songs and whatnot. Because, I mean, not to say that it was anything scandalous, very teen heartthrobby, but still, I cannot imagine being 11 years old and being literally carted around the country and the world on tour and singing and being thrown on stage like that.
It's very, yeah.
So that's family, the genesis of the Jets.
The family band thing has always kind of freaked me out a little bit. Yes. I've watched Jackson's American Dream a lot.
It was obviously, there was inspiration from the Jacksons, and there was inspiration from the Osmonds too, I would have to imagine.
Another Mormon family group.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. And Mana, to bring her interview up one more time, she did say that they kind of like, when they were trying to make it as a band, they basically would get carted around in a van. They drove around in the Midwest, and they ended up getting a residency, like a gig, in this chain of hotels that doesn't exist anymore called the Hawaiian Inn, because it was the 80s, and it was like, oh, you're Polynesian and you look brown enough, so we'll just tell everyone you're Hawaiian, even though they were from Tonga. So they were like the house band at this chain of Hawaiian themed hotels, like singing like hula songs. And can you imagine?
Oh my god. Oh.
And that was what it was like to be not white before 2011, everyone.
You're some kind of Polynesian. Just get in here.
So that was the origin. And basically, they had an agent who ended up contacting an agent at MCA Records, who finally came and saw them, and he signed them pretty quickly. And that was how they got their deal with MCA Records. I think
the timing of it was pretty good too, because I mean, there wasn't a lot of teen music on the scene at
that time.
Was no teen thing. That's true. Kind of on the genesis of
they brought teen music, because I mean, what were teens listening to? I mean, Menudo was kind of a thing by then, but that was like heavily geared toward Latino teens.
Yeah, I don't think Menudo really became
Latinos, if you will.
Oh, boo. just kidding. I think, God, I don't even know what they would have listened to. I'm trying to think of like
Duran Duran. I mean, that's what teenagers were listening to around the mid.
They were really into Madonna.
Yeah, obviously. You're right. I mean, but those acts were not, I would not call Duran Duran and Madonna like teen-oriented acts. You're right. The Jets were very much a teen-oriented act because they themselves were teenagers. So it worked.
Yep.
So this first album, MCA Records, comes out October of 1985. Just legitimately, just such a straight up great pop album. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's just so pop and it's so cute. The first single is Curiosity.
It's my favorite.
First
or second favorite, I don't know.
Did not chart on the Hot 100, want to point that out.
Yeah,
I think probably because I don't think Curiosity was marketed to pop radio. I think it was marketed because it did chart R&B and it charted dance. I think it was marketed to club and to R&B radio.
Yeah, I can see that. It's not really that much of a pure dance song like a lot of their later ones. You know, it's very smooth. It is very R&B.
Yeah.
Curiosity is. It's upbeat R&B.
It is, yeah, very upbeat R&B. You know, it's very, like, it fit the loose R&B definition at the time. Definitely would not be considered R&B now. Just killer track.
I love Curiosity.
But again, you know, 11 years old, and like when she took a walk to the ladies' room, you didn't hesitate to run to me. And it's like, oh, okay.
Is she just a plaything?
Is she just a plaything? Like, girl, you're a plaything. Like, literally, you should be playing on a playground right now. You 11.
Yeah, you 11 and you're a Mormon. Come on.
And the next single, the aforementioned Crush on You.
Oh, Crush on You is a classic.
I mean, yeah. I don't know. You can't do a study in 80s pop without acknowledging this song. It's just like I said earlier, it's the most 80s that an 80s pop song ever was.
If you can't dance to it, you can't dance.
Yeah, it's just killer.
It's on every running mix I ever have. It is a great song to work out to if you're looking for that.
We're going to put up a great live performance of this song too. It's something, this is a great time to note this too. The Jets were musicians. I mean, you know, they learned how to play instruments, but when they got into the studio, Mona again talked about this in the interview, which we'll link this interview, by the way, so you can read it. It's very interesting, but she kind of was like talking about how the studio execs were really helpful in the recording process in that they were pushing them to say, okay, well, like you sang the words and like you hit the notes, but like, I didn't believe that. Like, you need to sell yourself. You need to put personality into this and figure out who you are as an artist. And she said that was kind of the piece they were missing, like learning these instruments on their own. So the first album was mostly, it was studio musicians. It wasn't actually them playing the instruments. They were singing, but it was studio musicians doing the instrumentation. But when they went out and played live, they were playing the instruments.
Wow. There are a lot of groups that did that.
They kind of had to learn to tour and things like that. But I love watching this live performance of Crush on You, because you can tell it was sort of in the early stages, and they're like a little bit nervous. But they do it, and they sound really good. So, yeah, cool. We'll put that video up.
That's pretty cool. Do you remember the little Crush on You dance?
Yeah.
With the little knees thing.
Yeah, I always like...
Every time I hear that song, I always go, how did you know?
I still try to nail that dance, and I can never quite get it. My friend Eugene can kill it. He's spot on. Yes.
Really?
They also... Those two girls in that video, they are my fashion goals. I just want to dress like that for the rest of my life.
Really?
Yes.
I've never paid that
those
much
oversized
attention.
Sweaters.
And, they are very oversized
God,
sweaters.
God, they look so cute with the little sneakers in there. I'm just like, oh, fashion goals, me. Private Number is the next single, which did not crack top 40, was not a big hit for them. But I love this song. I think this was like kind of around the time that like having a second line in your house was becoming a thing. So it's sort of like, this is kind of throwing to the File 13 thing where it was like, you know, something that was so topical. But I think
that's what it is. Yeah.
I think that they did it in a way that doesn't make the song sound so dated.
Yeah, I think it works.
I mean, lyrically. I mean, obviously, sonically, it sounds dated. But, like, you know, it's about giving someone your number. But specifically, like, hey, there's a line two in my house, and this rings right in my bedroom. Like, you know, that's...
Yeah, girl, you are 11.
Girl, you are 11.
You ever seen To Catch a Predator? Have a seat, sir.
So this next single, totally, in my opinion, one of the greatest pop ballads ever recorded. Yeah.
Probably my favorite.
Yeah. By them or favorite pop ballad?
No, by them, probably.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, I don't know about all the time. I haven't thought about that. We'd probably have an ABBA in there.
Oh, yeah. No, this is on my top five list for sure of pop ballads of all time. It's You Got It All, which just beautiful.
Beautiful, I think in a way it's such a beautiful song. It's timeless.
Yes.
To me. I think you can listen to it now. Like, I hadn't listened to the song in years before we were prepping. It was like a song I kind of forgot about. And I'm like, God, this song is still so powerful in a way. It's good.
It is. It is a very timeless song. I mean, again,
I think someone could do it right now, not change that much, and still have a huge hit.
Yes, exactly. I totally agree with you. And it was covered one time by Britney Spears in the 90s. Yes, yeah. She covered it on her first album.
I know.
But also, do you know who wrote this song? I did not know this, and I looked at the liner notes for this song, and I was like, what?
Is this the Mr. Bray?
No.
Oh, wait, Mr. Bray is on here.
Somewhere. It was someone who had a big cheesy-ass one-hit wonder in the 70s.
Big cheesy-ass one-hit wonder in yes. the 70s. You just described literally all of the 70s.
I did. About cheating on your wife in the personal ads.
Oh, the Pina Colada guy.
Rupert Holmes. Yeah. Rupert Holmes wrote this song. Isn't that incredible?
Wow.
Like, how do you go from something so geeky like Escape, and then you write this beautiful
now I'm wondering ballad. What else he could have written. Because I mean, there was like a pretty big gap in there. Yeah, no, that's a beautiful song.
But timeless is definitely a great word to describe mm-hmm. this song. I remember I was driving around with my mom somewhere a few years ago, and this song came up on Shuffle, and she was convinced that it was like a song from the 50s or 60s that this group had covered. And I was like, no, this is their original. And she was like, she would not let it go. And that it has that timeless quality. It's just a classic pop love ballad. And you're so right. Somebody could record this today more or less as the Jets did, and they would have another hit with it. I agree with you.
Yeah. It's a beautiful, beautiful, timeless song. It is everything that is beautiful about ballad pop. Everything that's beautiful and perfect about it. If you don't like it, then you're crazy. Make up the clouds disappear.
So there would be a 2-year gap between the Jets releasing their debut self-titled album and when they would release their next studio pop album, because the next studio pop album came out September 87. But I do want to touch on very quickly the goofy thing that they did in late 1986, which was releasing the fabulous Christmas with the Jets.
Okay. I did not know this until show prep. And I was just like looking and I was like, Christmas? So I listened to the Jets Christmas album yesterday. It was 95 degrees and I listened to the Jets Christmas album. It's not great.
I do love Christmas in my heart. That holds a very special place because, well, it was Holly Dunn who wrote that, and I love Holly Dunn. And yeah, it's good stuff.
It's interesting if you want to have a different kind of Christmas and maybe go to listen to something that's not Do They Know It's Christmas, even though I don't know why you would not listen to that song over and over.
Anyway. It's true.
But yeah, I always bring Do They Know It's Christmas and everything.
This one will always, this will be on my Christmas playlist for the rest of my life. Chances really are to make it feel like Christmas in my heart has somebody seen the joy that I've been looking for. So 1987, we're up to September of 1987, and their sophomore album Magic is released, also on MCA Records. I think that the Jets probably had every reason to fail and to not have a successful mm-hmm. follow-up, because they were like a teen group. They were, you know, signed basically to do this a couple album deal for something that at the time would probably appear very kitschy, but they knock it out of the park. And again, they have a hit with this second
album. I think it helps that they were in that perfect transition when they started to where music was transitioning to what they were doing. So I think that they kind of got lucky in that, because their pop music was really turning into what the Jets was doing.
Yes.
Which is pretty awesome for them.
That's true. So, I mean, I guess it's pretty fair to say the Jets were sort of at the forefront of that new pop sound.
Yeah, and I mean, you start to have, like, Tiffany, Debbie Gibson come out. You're right. Starting to become a lot more teeny.
And The Jets were, you know, preceding those acts by a year or two, mm-hmm. for sure.
Yep.
The second album really built on what they did on the first one without being too derivative of the first album, because the first one is very, like, cutesy teen, very dance pop oriented, and I think Magic goes a little bit more into R&B, and it like they were, you could tell they were a couple years more grown up when they did this record. And some of them, you know, I think some of the older ones might have been into their 20s by now, because I think if they were 18, 19...
There's so many of them I can't keep up.
Right.
It is exhausting.
But the first single from Magic is Cross My Broken Heart, which I think is probably the closest to the stuff that they were doing on the first album.
Yes, it is very teeny.
Yeah. Cross My Broken Heart gets put on the soundtrack to Beverly Hills Cop 2 or 3?
I think it's Beverly Hills Cop 2.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think because I don't. Yeah, number three wasn't out by then, so yeah, I would have had to have been.
I didn't even know there was a three.
Yeah, totally. So yeah, Cross My Broken Heart. Very, I think, very reminiscent of Curiosity from the first record for sure. But yeah, great song, all on its own.
It's fantastic. Yeah, it does sound a lot like the first album.
And what I mean, what a great pop title that is. Even Cross My Broken Heart. Yeah. That's a great pop title.
It doesn't make any sense, but I love it. I dig it.
No, like Cross My Broken Heart. Like I know you're gonna break my heart again, but I promise I'll let you back.
You're 11.
Well,
I guess it's not. Girl, you're 13.
Girl, you're 13. Exactly. The second single is the kind of strange I Do You, which is a very odd name for a song. because the
depends on what you're singing about, Max.
Again, Girl Go 13. The full hook of when it comes to loving, if anybody does you, baby, I do you. I think I said that right. It's something like
yeah,
that.
Yeah, it's...
It's a big word salad, kind of a misfire. but this one was written by Stephen Bray.
Yes.
So
Stephen Bray gets into this, you know.
We'll give it to the man,
old
Stephen
Madonna.
Bray. I love this next one. The next single is Rocket to You, which, like, again, this is a song that really is good at taking things that were of the time, but still, like, it doesn't sound too dated. There are moments where you're like, okay, it's a little dated, but, like, this is a song about people who only call you when they want things, and specifically, this guy is complaining because this woman only calls him to come over to her house and fix things, and he's like, no, girl, I'm in love with you, and I want to date you, and he's like, you just want me to fix your toaster. It's so great. You know, it's so 80s.
It is a real problem with feminism. men's rights advocates are just listening to Rocket to You.
Typical woman. I just want to date her, and she only wants to call me when her shower goes. That little bubble noise is everything.
As a single woman, I do have those thoughts sometimes. Yeah. I'm like, you know what? Just go to your boyfriend.
The modern version of this is like women who match with men on Tinder just to get free dinners and then never talk to them again. That's the modern, like the modern Rocket to You would be about that.
I guess maybe. I still think the fixing thing is, if you are a woman of a certain age and you're like living alone and you have to fix your own shit, like it sucks and you don't want to. Oh. I still think it's very topical.
Come on, gender roles are so boring. There are plenty of women who know how to fix things. Just like there are plenty of men who are total shit at fixing things.
Yeah, that's very true. And I generally tend to date the ones that are worse at me at fixing things.
Oh, see, there you go.
Yeah, I know.
See, gender roles are bullshit, folks.
That's why I never, like, I can't, like, reach my porch light. So it's just always going to be out. Unless someone wants to fix that for me. And you know what? I'm, you know, dating
sex. They need to rock it to you.
They need to rock it to me and fix my damn porch light so I can see. Watch all my children, and you wonder if there's something I can do for you. Well, all that I can say, baby, I can rock it to you, honey. The only thing You've Got It All was the big pop ballad on the first album, and I've seen artists do this before where they have a big hit with a ballad and then they'll try to follow it up with a ballad on the next album and it just doesn't work. It's hard to make a big with a ballad.
It is
hard.
But the Jets succeeded. Again, the Jets are like defying odds left and right with this album. I will note, by the way, that Tiffany and Debbie Gibson, I think, would also go on to do that.
Oh, yes.
Because Tiffany's songs, the first album was Could Have Been, and then she had the, was it All This Time on the second album? Mm-hmm. Also a big ballad hit. And then Debbie Gibson, of course, would do it with Foolish Beat, which is a big hit on the first record.
Foolish
and then
Beat is...
The Beautiful Lost in Your Eyes on the second album, yes. But the Jets did it.
We have a Debbie episode. Oh, my God.
Oh, yeah. Don't worry.
Oh, I cried during
The Jets on this record did it with Make It Real. Again, beautiful and just a perfect pop ballad. I can think of times in my life this song hit me and meant something to me, and like I felt things from hearing this 13-year-old girl sing this.
Girl, you're 13.
Girl, you're 13.
They got very lucky with their ballads. I mean, there are some ballads that are great that never make it big.
Right.
That are huge and maybe just like are culturally, you know them because they were just so good, but really they barely made the charts. But they did it.
They did. And Make It Real, I also think we should note, is the best showcase of their voice and how good these two girls were at these vocalizations.
Yeah, that's very true.
There's the instrumentation is pretty slim on Make It Real. And it just really lets their voice shine.
Yeah, I mean, it's probably a lot of that coaching that they got where you really have to feel the lyrics. You can't just sing them. And you really hear that in their voices. Like, you've got it all also. It's just that way. You can hear that emotion in their voices.
Yes, for sure. You didn't feel the same. Though we're apart, you're in my heart. Give me one more chance to make it real. The song Anytime didn't chart, but again, I want to note it just because Rupert Holmes wrote it too.
Rupert Holmes doing all in on this?
I think he probably had a thing with MCA Records and he was just writing songs for their artists. That would be my guess.
I'm going to go and see.
I find it hard to believe Rupert Holmes was hanging out drinking pina coladas with the Mormon Jets.
Like, potentially cheating on his wife with his wife. What a weird fucking song.
So yeah, Anytime worth noting just because it was another Rupert Holmes song. So there you go.
Yeah, I'm going to go after this. I'm going to look up and see what other songs he's potentially written that are very weird.
Yeah, we can have a songs Rupert Holmes has written episode.
Yes. Subtitle, what the hell? And if the night grows long, I will just sing this song. It'll come true, you wait and see.
There'd be one more single on this album, Send In All My Love, which, good stuff, but did not chart well at all. Didn't
it sounds a lot 40. Like their other songs.
It did. It was just sort of a filler track, but, you know, I love it because I love the Jets.
Yeah. It's entertaining. It's sure. Not.
It was a number one dance hit.
Groundbreaking. Oh, wow.
Number one on the club charts, but it was not a pop hit.
I think that was their only number one on the club charts.
It was. You were correct. Yeah. She captures every eye. All the time, I know when I catch yours, you'll be mine. I've got so much to say. Until you look my way, sending all my love to you, baby. Sending all my love to you. So, the Jets would kind of have one more album in the classic sense of the Jets as we know them. They would go on to, you know, release other things in the 90s and beyond. But, like, when we're talking, like, the classic Jets with the classic lineup, minus Eugene, who had left the band by this time to be in Boys Club.
Which, you know, if you're a super religious Mormon, that is possibly the gayest name you could come up with for a group in late 80s. I'm very into religion. Look at my...
Yes. Eugene,
Boys Club.
I don't think Boys Club merits their own episode, so maybe we should just drop a little clip of that here. Because Eugene and his buddy, I can't even remember the other guy's name that was in Boys Club, but it was Eugene and another guy, and they had a hit with the song, I Remember Holding You.
That was number 8. I did not know that it was... I actually looked at that. It was number 8, and I'm like, how the hell did this get so high? I mean, it's okay.
But yeah.
It's very Glenn Medeiros.
It is very Glenn Medeiros.
It sounds like a Glenn Medeiros song.
It very
Maybe
much
that's
does.
Why I charted number 8. They thought they were buying Glenn Medeiros, but really it was Boys Club. I remember holding you.
So yeah, that was Eugene and his buddy in Boys Club, and that was 1989, which was around the same time, actually it was the same time, that Believe, the third Jets album, as we would know the classic Jets lineup, would come out. This was July of 1989. It was a big summer album. The first single on this really is kind of the only notable song on the album, in my opinion. It's it, like, if you're just doing like a brush over of the Jets chronology, and that's You Better Dance, which again did not crack top 40, but was a mild hit in the clubs, we'll say.
Yeah, I mean, this album wasn't nearly as, they were not as huge as they were in the late 80s.
No, this was a big fall off in their popularity, and I think that, again, this is sort of where their luck had run out, we'll just say, because I even think the second album was a surprise, so the fact that they stretched this into a third album, I mean, like, and again, I love the Jets, so I love the third album, but it was, they were very clearly a dated thing at this point.
Yeah, the I think they probably waited a little bit too long. They could have maybe done, I think the music industry had changed a little bit too much.
For sure.
By that time.
And
they didn't change enough with it.
You were, like, boy bands were going to start becoming a thing. Uh-huh. Like, New Kids on the Block was springing up by now. And then you had Tiffany and Debbie Gibson also, who were falling out of favor around this time, too. Because Tiffany and Debbie Gibson did not really make it beyond any further than the Jets did. In terms of, you know, chronologically speaking. But yeah, you're correct. We were headed more toward a Milli Vanilli, New Edition,
hip-hop, New Kids on the Block. Yeah. Or the hip-hop beats.
That's where teen,
fully hip-hop.
That's where teen music was going at this point.
Yeah.
So, yeah, that's kind of the Jets as we know and love them. They sort of did not play music in the classic lineup for a long time. Mana, again, talked about this in the interview, how the tensions were really bad. There was a lot of money that they didn't get. I mean, can you imagine having that many people in a band and trying to divide up money and whatnot? And, you know, when you're dealing with record labels, it's a scummy industry. So there was a lot of money that they never saw. She said they didn't even have a house at this point. They were renting movie play. I mean, and think about how popular they were, and they have all these hits, and they didn't even own a house for the family. So it's like, okay, I would have wanted to deuce out at that point too. And, you know, they were so young, so none of them had any educations. They couldn't do anything. So, you know, she talked about how she personally moved to Hawaii for 10 years, kind of didn't talk to a lot of her family for some time, but she kind of said, like, their religion basically kept them together and brought them back together as a family unit, and that they're all cool now. And they do play now. They don't really tour in the sense of touring, but they do play shows here and there.
Yeah, and they the original Jets line, the Jets lineup is very fun. The Jets lineup is fun because it's always the family, but there are so many of them that you just kind of cycle in and out.
Yes.
So, I mean, it's very good for that. You don't have to really go outside to find talent to replace someone who just, you know, who's 40 now and doesn't really want to be in the band.
That's right.
Has soccer practice. Their kid has soccer practice, so can't play today.
And again, they still sound good. They can still sing. It's
not bad. I haven't heard them in a long time. I know they've done like a lot of gospel stuff.
Yeah, they did. They kind of did get into doing inspirational music that was more in line with like their Mormon/Catholic upbringing. I'm not sure if they consider themselves Mormon or Catholic or a hybrid of the two, but I know that the one parent was Mormon and the one was Catholic. Ooh. But yeah, they do religious music as well, but they still, what's interesting, usually when people go religious, they go full on into it and they just abandon all their pop stuff, but not the Jets. They still perform their pop songs and they very much embrace their pop career, but it's not like their music was scandalous or anything like that. I mean,
it's
just goofy, fun teen pop, and they embrace it and they like it and they still perform it and it's still cute.
Yeah, I saw a funny story, by the way. I don't know why I didn't say this earlier. I just remembered it when I was researching this. And it sent me on like a 2-hour journey of trying to figure out this whole story. There was something on Wikipedia that said that they had, in 1987, it was just one line, no explanation. It was like, in 1987, they played a full set in the New Orleans Superdome to a completely empty audience.
Really?
And I was like, wait, what?
I've never heard this story.
And so I was like, so I looked at whatever the reference was, and it was Casey Kasem's America's Top 40 from February 27th, 1988, when Rocket to You was on the chart. So I was like, okay, can I find this episode? I dug and found this episode of Casey Kasem to listen to this story. Because I was like, how the hell do you play to an empty Superdome? Why are you even doing that? Did they just break in? What's up?
Yeah.
So apparently they got booked. They were trying to like get on these tour dates just kind of, you know, whenever they could after the first album, before the second. And they ended up playing. They ended up getting booked last minute as an opening gig for something that was Luther Vandross and Stephanie Mills.
Oh, nice.
And yes. Yes. Anyway.
That shows you what an R&B audience they were being marketed
to.
Oh,
exactly. Yeah. So Luther Vandross and Stephanie Mills. And they get booked last minute. Someone screws it up and, you know, they would have to push in order to get them in. They'd have to push Luther and Stephanie behind. But they were so locked into their schedules that they couldn't end up doing it. So here come the Jets in New Orleans and they're like, all right, ready to play this show. Woo-woo. And then they go and they're like, hey, by the way, we can't push their schedules back, so you can't play. But you still get paid. And so they were like, instead of just being like cool people who are just like, cool, I get paid and I don't have to do anything. They decided to go before the doors opened and just thought of it as a paid rehearsal. So they just go into the Superdome and play a full entire set to no seats.
That is amazing.
Yeah. So it took me a long time to find that stupid episode so I could hear that whole story. I thought they just broke into the Superdome, which was cool.
Oh, one final thing, by the way, I want to mention about this group from the Mana interview that I learned. I did not know the Jets was not their original name. I also did not know where they got the name the Jets. Did you know this?
I saw that they, I remember reading once that they were like originally going to be Quasar.
That was their original name, Quasar, yeah. Because of the brand of TV.
Mm-hmm.
That's what Mana said at the interview. It was like, she's like, it was a brand of TV that was popular at the time. And I'm like, what? I mean, that's very 80s of her.
Yes,
you know?
It is. Yeah, I'm glad they did not go to that.
But the Jets came they were on their way to a gig and Benny and the Jets came on the radio and their manager said, that's your name. And so they said, okay. And that was that.
Where's Benny?
I don't know. Benny was Eugene. Maybe that was the other guy in Boys Club. It was Benny. Eugene left the Jets to be with Benny.
Eugene and Benny in Boys Club.
Well, that's our little retrospective of the wonderful, short-lived family group, the Jets, who are still at it.
Yes.
Go check out their live videos. We'll put them on the episode page for this episode on our website, which is offbeattrackscast.com.
We are also on Twitter at offbeattracks.
Yeah,
tweet us, follow us.
Follow us, please. Say hello. Tell us what you want to hear us do.
We love to be talked to. We're very lonely.
That's right. So with that, I'm Max.
I'm Danielle.
See you.